Yeah. So, and John and I talked about what is a partnership, and we talked about the statutes in the Texas statute. It's RUPA, it's UPA. It gives a definition of what a partnership is. However, we don't really have a great definition of what is a partner. So the definition just means someone that you admit to the partnership. But just because you classify someone or call them something, we've realized that that might not be the end of the question. So when I was talking to Bob about this, I was thinking that this question is at the other end of the who is an employee, who is an independent contractor question, right? So this is a question that I think it was the first assignment I got as a first year associate is to figure out if these bike messengers were employees or independent contractors. It's a big question now because of the gig economy. And so we understand that employees have a bundle of rights and a bundle of protections. So if you think gig workers are on this end and partners are on this end, well, partners should be awesome, right? You should have even more protections than an employee. You should have even more benefits than an employee. But what we're going to see is that from a number of considerations, if firms could call everybody a partner but not give them all of the bundle of sticks that we think that partners have, that would be great for them. And so our question is, can you do that? Can you just call people partners but not give them any of the bundle of sticks and have both federal law and state law in a number of arenas respect that? And of course, the answer is it depends. So those are the kinds of things that we are going to be thinking about, right? So it can't possibly be just if you admit someone into your partnership, have them sign the partnership agreement, but they have nothing to show for it. Are they really partners? So they're out of the scope of employment law and they have a different tax regime and those kinds of things. I think the analogy that I would say is in corporate law now, sometimes we have shareholders that have zero voting rights. Right, common stock shareholders. If you own Snap, I think you have zero rights, zero voting rights. If you own Facebook, you have some tiny little fraction as to what Mark Zuckerberg has. So are you really a shareholder? Right, if you think about master limited partnerships, we don't even call those limited partners. We call them unit holders because we know that they're really just bondholders, right? Okay, on to the next slide. So we tend to think of all these consequences when we teach business entities, the consequences of being a partner. You have personal liability, you get to split profits, you're on the hook equally for liabilities, and you have this right to co-manage. Now, Bob, you're sitting at a law firm. Does every partner in the United States in a law firm have all of these rights?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I won't tar you with the word partnerhood, which will, if you run it, will not pass spell check.
That's a horrible word.
I thought about, how do you describe sort of the attributes, and you can't really talk about the attributes of partnership because then you're talking about the entity. So partnerhood's my own formulation here, and each of these three attributes may be part of the elements of being a partner, and each of the attributes here may also be lacking, and a person may still be considered to be a partner for state law purposes. And this is discussed on pages 4 and 5 of the outline, but historically, back in the days of when Larry Ribstein started working on your book and started working on the book that I write, partners had vicarious liability. That was a fundamental nature of being a general partner in a partnership. At this point, it's almost universal that partners don't have vicarious liability, at least. Any partnership that isn't the kind of partnership that you described this morning as an informal partnership, virtually anybody, certainly in professional partnerships, is going in and ticking the box and eliminating the concept of vicarious liability. So in many respects, I can say nobody in at Holland & Hart has vicarious liability. We're an LLP, as are most partnerships in our line of work. Second element is what I call a financial interest in the partnership. And that's a sharing of profits, a sharing of the capital on liquidation. And very often, you know, we'll see in some of these circumstances, having that financial interest is something that sort of identifies a person as being a partner. And then I've put down here management rights in the partnership. And this is discussed at some length on page 5, because management rights basically kind of subdivide themselves into, and let me qualify this by saying, this is how I think it works. And I am more than open to being disabused, because this is kind of a rubric I've set up to think about it, but it may not make sense. But I break management rights into 3 kinds of rights. One is a decisional right, a right to help decide how the partnership's going to conduct its business.